Hello, good morning, and welcome to another episode of The Grill. Hey, this is episode 091, countdown to 109 to go, and today we're talking with Misha Schmidt. I love Twitter, okay? I find people on Twitter. Misha's been following the show and tweeting and stuff, and he's an interesting dude because his background is actually radio and relatively new, maybe 10 years, to the video space, and does a whole lot of different stuff. But this conversation, you know, at the end of every episode many episodes, I ask people, you know, if you could change one thing about Final Cut 10, if you could sneak in the back door, what would you tell the programmers to do? And many of the people have said that there's various things that they want to change in the audio world. Now, I actually kind of like the audio. I would love to change some things also, but this discussion is mostly about audio, and it's quite interesting. And Misha has some really good input and insights because of his radio background about some of the features that he would like to see changed. And so the end question is really not. It's really not there because most of this episode is about, you know, what he would like to see changed. So, it's quite interesting. I think you're going to like it. I want to thank the people at Premium Beat for, speaking of audio, how is that for a segue? Speaking of audio, I want to thank the people at Premium Beat for, stepping up and sponsoring what we're doing and being so generous and supporting us. We are weeks away from seeing the new website that they're doing, and that's going to be fun. And I'm stoked to be able to actually click on it. I've seen screen grabs of it because, you know, they sent me some. But I love Premium Beat. I love the way the music edits. I just did something today, not today, but Friday at the office where I had to, you know, swap out a bunch of files, and I love Premium Beat. So I'm going to ask you just as a friend, please go take a look. If you're not going to go buy something from them, at least promise me that you'll go check it out, okay? Go check out what they're doing. Listen to some cuts. You know, I don't even think – no, actually, I think you do have to make an account, but you don't actually have to purchase anything. I don't even think you have to give them a credit card, maybe. I don't know. It's all safe. Make yourself an account, and you can start – slugging away favorites, things that you like that you might want to use. So when a producer or somebody walks in the room and they go, "Hey, do you have any ideas?" You go, "Yeah, as a matter of fact, check this out. I got some of my sweet picks here." So anyway, that's Premium Beat. Go check them out. So at this point, I want to go now. Misha's in Germany, so he sounds a little bit different than me. But interesting guy, and I think you're going to enjoy this interview with Misha Schmidt.
Hi.
Hey, Misha. How are you doing?
Good. And how are you?
I'm doing well. Did I pronounce your name properly?
Yeah, that's good. Yeah,
well, okay. No, hold on. Now that sounds like that's a okay. Was that right?
No. That's good. Really, that's good. Misha is good.
Yeah, good. Good for an American. Not bad. Okay. Hey. Yeah. So, how you doing today? Thanks for taking the time to do this.
Sure thing. I'm good. It's a calm Sunday, so to speak.
The end of the weekend, time to mellow out, get started on the next week, come tomorrow morning?
Something like that, yeah. Well, I had a shoot this morning, a little quick one, nothing fancy, but now it's just, checking footage and, yeah.
Is that the one that you did with the A7S and the phone?
No, that was
Twitter.
Last
when was that?
Night.
Okay.
Yeah, I had to test the 4K on the Xperia thingy. Yeah, well, it's not as good as the A7S.
It's an interesting world we live in with all these cameras, yeah, isn't it?
It's kind of funny and interesting and crazy in a way. Yeah,
yeah, it definitely. So what do you think of the A7S?
It's amazing. It's quite good. It changed quite a bit my approach, getting quite a good quality out of this little cam. You know, before I was mainly DSLR. Mm-hmm. I rented like C300 if I needed something more special or solid, but mm-hmm. actually nowadays doesn't need that thing, even though the production company I work for most of the time just ordered a S7, so the real camcorder.
Right, right, right. So out of curiosity, yeah, what would be your criteria to rent out, to hire out the C300 over a DSLR?
Well,
what's the tipping point?
Well, mainly it was like getting a little bit better audio in. That was most interesting, and getting a sharper image out of a good sensor, and especially low light. We did a big event for Converse in an abandoned factory in Berlin. Lots of night events and parties and stuff like that, you know, and skate lab, skate park thingy. And yeah, we needed a little bit more solid stuff for this kind of project.
I'm glad you mentioned the skate lab. Is that the same place that you did the skate on art?
Yes, that's the event we did that. Actually, the skate on art was that slow-mo high-speed shot thing.
Yes.
It was done by another company that did all the slow-mo stuff, you know.
Yeah.
The Phantom and Mirror.
You did the behind the scenes of it?
Yeah, and we did a whole documentary, and like the music and art and the 70-minute thing that we did for that.
Oh, I got to say, the audio in it is great. There's a in the behind the scenes bit that's on your website. There's this short little barrage, if you will, of the various saws, and it's like, oh yeah. And there's always a point in a piece when I watch something. There's a point where it's I guess you'd call it the lean forward moment. It's like, okay. Now, they got my respect. Now I'm going to totally, you know, give this thing my all, my attention. And it's an interesting phenomenon, because that little barrage of all the saws is probably, I'm guessing, I don't know, I've only watched the piece once, maybe like in the first 20 seconds, maybe 30 seconds.
Yeah.
And it totally sucked me in, you know? Great audio in that.
Well, actually, that is... nothing special. It's all DSLR that was shot on the 60D. Some was 3300. So it was nothing special in terms of audio recording. Just, you know.
is it just being grabbed off the little crap mic on the 60?
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's a saw. How about, you know, it's just a horrible sound anyway.
Yeah.
No, I mean, it does. I think,
in fact, you know, sometimes it matters how you... you mix it in, or using a compressor, equalizer, you know, to finesse even not so good sound in the first place.
No, absolutely. And I think that it speaks very highly to the power of editorial, because you could have done 8 shots in, you know, 10 seconds, and I would have just been like, you're killing me. And yet it's a great example of, you know, less is quite literally more, because it probably took, you know, 40 frames total. I don't know. I'm guessing. I've only watched the piece once, maybe 2 seconds, and it's the moment that I'm sitting here talking to you about, you know?
Yeah.
So anyway, so what is your editorial background prior to getting involved using Final Cut 10?
Well, I started in radio, actually, in maybe 1999, 98, something like that.
Okay.
So I'm a radio person. So sound and audio is kind of my first thing, you know. I care for audio the most. So that is my background. And then eventually, you know, video came in, started to... be a thing as well, shooting then again. So yeah, radio was my first thing. We actually used Cooledit Pro back then. That's actually nowadays Audition.
Okay.
We used that in radio days.
What was it called?
Cooledit Pro.
I remember, yeah, that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Basically, it's the same thing still. It kind of looks the same in a way. before the facelift, of course, then the latest facelift.
I actually used Audition.
But yeah, there
was
still elements in Audition that kind of reminded me of Cooledit.
Very cool. So, So you have the radio background. When did you start getting involved in, you know, as your website says, you know, film, sound, color?
Yeah. Well, not quite sure, actually. Maybe in 2003 or 4? Something like that.
Okay, yeah, so I'm one of these guys that's been doing this forever, and you see people like, oh, yeah, dude, I can totally do that. I'll just ask you the question that nobody will say out loud, but come on, man. What made you think you could handle the picture as well as the sound?
Just, you know, we did a thing in a theatrical thing, and we needed video, you know, with projectors going on all over the stage and stuff like that. So, yeah, I kind of had to do it in a way and learned with an Avid on an, I think it was like Windows NT on a big IBM machine with maybe 21 gigabytes of RAID storage.
Yeah.
Something like that. And yeah, so I learned on Avid. But yeah, eventually it came more and more video stuff and learned it by doing, just editing and, you know, some eventually Final Cut 6 or 5. I'm not quite sure.
Right.
Came along with my first, with the first Mac we got at work.
Were you doing the Avid on a PC?
Yeah. Okay. Windows NT.
Right. I remember that.
Yeah. So, yeah. So, eventually, it involved, or I moved on or got new things going on and was fascinated by the whole video thing.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's kind of a common theme. I mean, a few episodes ago, episode 85, I spoke with Dean Sherwood. Excuse me. And, you know, Dean was a still photographer. And, and literally, like, I think he said, like, 3 years ago, 100% of his income was as a still photographer. And now, just a couple of years later, 100% of his income is shooting video and editorial. And, you know, he travels all over the world with a group from England called the Vamps. And he's like their video guy. And if you haven't heard this interview, if you've skipped around, go back and listen to episode 85 because it's really interesting. At one point, he talks about how they were crewing up. They were scheduling how they were going to do their Australia tour. And in today's day and age, where public image is so important in you know, the kind of, you know, music industry, they opted... They actually budgeted to take Dean, their personal videographer, if you will, you know, documentarian, I like that word better, before they planned on taking the sound engineer.
Oh, boy.
You know, because, you know, you can hire audio engineers, as you know, all over the world. I think they have since decided, let's take our own audio people. But Dean was on board first because it's that big a deal. And that's why, you know, for many years, I've been looking at a lot of people in this business, you can get sort of, I think territorial is the word I want to say. Like, hey, this is my deal. Back off. And yet, when you look at, you know, I mean, just that story there and your story, you guys are, you know, Dean made a job for himself. He made a job that did not exist. And he had his little 5D, you know, Mark II or III at the time. And he showed the guy what he can do. He's like, yeah, shoot us some video. And all of a sudden, his whole career changes, you know?
Yeah.
Then and now he's carrying around. Thing
still kind of opened up a lot of opportunities. Even though others say, well, you know, everybody can shoot video now, but everybody can produce music now or mix music on his little notebook, you know, since the tools are so available. But, you know, sometimes it also it's a little bit more than just the gear and stuff like that.
Now, are you kind of like the full-blown Pro Tools guy? What's your audio editor of choice?
Two, actually. Nowadays, Audition for all the podcasts and, you know, mastering and just pure editing and, you know, noise reduction, stuff like that. I have to do that. But Logic Pro X is today's mixer of choice, if you will, mixing application.
I tell you, I purchased Logic 9, and I was like, okay, I'm going to learn this. And like literally like 2 months later, they announced Logic to X. I'm like, ah, you bastards. And so I bought that, and I just – we always talk about it on this show about the learning wall getting over in Final Cut. And it's probably just that I am not audio savvy enough at all, but I can't get like the simplest things done in Logic. I really need to find a good, you know, I need to find the Chris Fenwick tutorials of Logic X that I don't know if they've been made, but,
Yeah, there are quite a few actually for Logic Pro X or Logic Pro, but I can't name it right off my head. it's a little bit tricky. There are a few things you have to know how to handle it, especially all the automation and something like that might be a bit tricky at first. But it's quite powerful. It is kind of more powerful than Pro Tools, even though Pro Tools still is like the best
king, yeah.
It still is kind of, it's more fun. It sounds funny, but yeah, to edit, you know, big projects in Pro Tools, it still kind of rules them all, so to speak. Logic Pro X is quite powerful, especially the plugins that just are in there right away are quite powerful. So it's for the money, and especially for FCPX users, it's a good move to go there and learn that application.
Now, have you experimented with any of the kind of round tripping, and I'm using giant air quotes there, is there a signal path to get your audio out of Logic, out of Final Cut 10 into Logic and back?
Yeah, it kind of is. You can use XML and export your project, and you even it's a thing you can use roles in FCPX, of course. And there's a setting in the XML export called metadata view, and it's usually set to general, I guess. And if you set that to audio, it actually uses the roles like voiceover, what's it called? Dialogue, right, music, and effects, and actually kind of manages or arranges the Logic Pro session for you that way. So all the dialogue comes first, and I think it's music, and then all the sound effects tracks. So that's quite nice, and names the tracks right away. So all the dialogue tracks are named dialogue, and music is music, and so that is quite nice to get it to Logic Pro X, and then actually just export an XML. No, not an XML. There's a let me look it up.
Sure, sure, no problem.
So there is an option. So you actually export like all the tracks. If you have maybe 10 tracks, it actually exports
stems.
10 audio files. Yeah, it's kind of like stems.
Right.
Even though stems are like, you know, all the sound effects in one track, all the music in one track.
Right.
You get separate tracks for your all your tracks inside of Logic Pro X. Let me just see it. Export.
And when you do this XML out using the metadata view, the appropriate audio metadata view, do you get custom roles that you've also created as well? I would assume.
I think so. It just it arranges them in the when you import it into Logic Pro X, it arranges those, you know, all the dialogue, all the music, all the sound effects, all the other roles. Not it's not a mixture of all kinds of stuff all over the place. You know, two tracks dialogue, then one track SF sound effects, then music, and then use general. So that really helps to organize stuff.
Yeah, you know, when I was on the virtual user group a couple months ago that Pixel Core does, Michael Matzdorf had like I think it may have been slightly confusing if anybody watched that, but he had like a Photoshop mock-up of how he wanted the Final Cut 10 user interface to work.
Saw that.
Did you? Yeah. So he had like, look, this is the way you could do it. Like, have a region for all your dialogue and a region for all your music and a read. And it's like, and I remember, and I was sitting there watching it and I was thinking, I hope people don't think that they just haven't figured out how to turn on that mode, because, you know, it was a really good Photoshop mock-up and stuff like that. That happens to me sometimes with Hello Richard, Richard Taylor, or as we like to say, Richard Scrolling Timeline Taylor. And Richard always does this stuff on his website where he mocks up screenshots. And he's like, yeah, there should be a button right here. And I always have to like stop and read it. It's like, okay, yeah, that button doesn't exist.
Wait a minute, did I miss that?
Wait, how do you turn that button on?
Yeah, and like you in your show, every other person, you know, if you ask them what should be changed in FCPX, it's audio. It's the most time is audio. And still, yeah, I kind of miss those. There was a post from, I'm not quite sure, Michael Chioni?
Yeah.
He showed how he did all the audio right inside of FCPX. And yes, you can do that way. And yes, you have all the nice plugins that are actually from Logic Pro 9. So that was first, you know, I was excited about that in FCPX. Oh yeah, I have all my nice plugins I know from Logic Pro 9. But then again, you can't really, it's not quite the same experience.
Okay, I'm very curious about this, and I would love for you to elaborate on this. Because I know you listen to the show, and I have said many times, you know, that the subframe audio editing in Final Cut 10 is really important. I love the fact that I can edit as tightly as I can. And I also, you know, I have some pretty nice plugins. I have like the, you know, Isotope RX3. Yeah. I haven't upgraded yet, but
it's cool.
So explain to me how the plugin experience is different between Final Cut and Logic.
Yeah, the main thing is you actually can use them on tracks.
You don't
have to do
per clip.
Like if you have a long interview stuff, like a long documentary, you know, 30 minutes of interviews, you go crazy if you have different settings for different people. Even copying like settings between those, and it's a mess in the end. And even if you say, I should remove all of them.
Oh, yeah.
That's a funny task.
Can we have the remove attributes again, please? That would be really wonderful. I don't think that should be that hard, really.
And just opening up, you know, in Logic Pro X, you can actually make presets for your channels. I have presets for interview one with a certain person or for a certain client that I know. Oh, that's the style. He likes a little bit more like a low end, you know. So I push the low end a little bit more and stuff like that. I have presets for that. Even for my master track, that's also essential to have a master track. That's kind of the thing that Michael Chioni posted. Yeah, you can kind of hear, maybe it's just my ears or audio ears, so to speak, that kind of hears, there's a little bit of mastering missing. And that's something simple, but sometimes quite essential to have a quite nice master limiter and ozone 5 on it or something like that to just make it sound a little bit nicer, so to say. And, you know, you can copy a drag and drop plugins from one channel to the another, so you don't have to do the whole I save a preset and then I load the plugin and then I load a preset again. Right. You just, you know, alt click on a plugin and track it to another channel. And and submix, you know, usually I have like in the end three faders for my main mix, for my final mix: the dialogue fader, the music fader, and the sound effects fader. And I have maybe an EQ and a compressor on those as well, just to give the finished sound, and just manage those three faders to mix it all together.
This is really good. That's a great description. And frankly, it kind of goes back to what many people have been asking for. Can we have some sort of you know, I would call them roles based inserts. You know, why can't I just insert a master compressor on all the dialogue, or like you said, have a master output as well? I'm just going to clarify for what my friend Jeff Dykhouse, who was on. Let me think, what episode was Jeff on? Jeff invented a word when we were in college. He called me. Where are you, Jeff? What episode were you? This is bad radio. as the idiot scrolls through a list here, I'm sure you could search it on Digital Cinema Cafe. But he called me. He used to always call me a vidiot. So for people that don't get really heavily involved in the audio world. If you take, you know, like an album or, you know, an audio recording, quite often the real magic happens in the mastering. And that is the mastering to audio is what color grading is to video.
That's right, yeah.
And it is really the moment where, one of the things that's historically most well known for in mastering is sort of a phenomenon that happened, I believe, in the 80s, where all of the rock and pop bands, they just wanted to be the loudest thing on the radio. So like when you were scanning, you know, back in the old days where we had a dial, you know, scanning through radio, you'd hit one song and it'd be like really loud and present. And you'd say, yeah, that's the song. That's the station I want to listen to. Well, yeah, but what you're hearing is that recording is really loud, you know, and I like to think that, you know, the my podcast is very loud. You know, I do a little bit of, you know, stuff on that to make it, you know, be as close to zero without being zero as possible. But I think that's an important thing to think about when you're doing your video. There's nothing worse than, you know, clicking on a file on YouTube or Vimeo and all of a sudden going, ugh, I can't hear it. And the first thing you do is you're reaching for your volume knob.
Yeah, or just, you know, have the dialogue and music play well together. And most likely it's like loud music, then it goes down to zero, so to speak. And then it's a little bit of dialogue that's not quite loud, but yeah, it's okay. And then it goes right back to loud music again, or not even that. And yeah, mastering can help you, but even that is quite essential to have tracks and, you know, play with the faders or, you know, have compressor and equalizer on each of those. Like you said, you make a little hole for the music, for the dialogue in the music and stuff like that. That's essential, and you can do that in FCPX, but then again, not really, at least in my experience. Yeah, you can make a compound clip and put a limiter or compressor on that, but then you have to go back and forth. You know, if I do the whole project like video editing and sound and stuff like that, I most likely do that in Premiere just because it actually works right there. I can have submix. I can have automation. I can use my plugins, even though not the plugins I have that come with Logic Pro X. They are actually kind of nice, and the EQ and compressor sounds really good from Logic Pro X. I can do that with my Wave plugins and my Isotope plugins in Premiere Pro right away. I don't have to leave the application. That's quite essential if you have like quick turnarounds, lots of changes, you know, that's quite, even you have a good workaround with Logic Pro X to FCPX with just exporting an XML, and it actually exports all those tracks. You can make changes and stuff like that. But you have to go back and forth and, you know, have it right there in the editing application is quite powerful for quick turnarounds and just, you know, comfort, so to speak.
So do you think... And we're just speculating. And again, I just want to say that I know nothing. You know, I don't get any insider information at Apple at all. So do you think Apple would be better served by putting some of these audio features into Final Cut 10 that many people have asked for, you know, the mastering and roles-based plugins and whatnot? Or do you think they would be better off streamlining and polishing the round trip through Logic?
Good question. Hard to answer. Both have quite a good potential, so to speak. I think, though, it would be better to put it right inside the application in FCPX. It would make it quite more powerful right away. Even though a streamlined process, you know, could work as well. But yeah, even the turnaround thing, workflow between Premiere and Audition is... it's always kind of odd if you have to leave the application itself.
Mm-hmm.
Even, you know, sending stuff to SpeedCrate inside of Premiere Pro works, but then again, why not just do it right inside the app? So to speak, an app for everything, one app for everything. So, but yeah, that's not possible and can be chaotic as well.
So I'm going to offer up a suggestion here, folks at Apple. What if you had, you have to be familiar with Premiere's render in place, I think they call it.
Feature. Yeah, I think so.
So like when you like do the dynamic link out to After Effects and you can like, you know, work on your comp and then you sort of render it and Premiere automatically replaces that rendered output back into the timeline. Okay. So,
yep.
So even if you have a very complex composition in After Effects, because you've rendered it, it will essentially, of course, play in Premiere, which is really no different than I've worked between After Effects and Final Cut 7, and even to a certain degree between After Effects and Final Cut 10 today. So what if we had something kind of like that with Logic? So let's say you could create essentially a dynamic link. So you open up your Final Cut 10 project and you have all your roles laid out. You then would open up Logic and open up either some sort of a sidecar file or maybe you, from within Final Cut 10, you click on something in the audio that says, you know, edit this in Logic. The whole project opens up in Logic, and then you can diddle, diddle, fiddle, fiddle. And if you were to go back into Final Cut 10 and make a change, maybe that could ripple through into Logic, even though, because there's like a live link between them, and it's not a literal export XML, so now we have a snapshot in time that is what we are opening up in Logic. Because that way you could have one guy cutting picture and another guy fixing audio simultaneously.
Yeah, and those workflows, the link between two different applications that are specialized in video and one for audio quite works. But for a one-man band, you know, put a mixer in there. Well, have some tracks or something.
I totally
agree,
yeah.
So, yeah,
then you could have a, you know, in Logic, you could say, you know, stamp that down to my project, and it would do basically a left right or 5-1 or whatever your mixdown is, render in place, and it would automatically mute all your other audio and just turn on your stereo or 5-1 file. And now if you were to make an edit in to anything in the audio in Final Cut, it would go, hey, you're gonna break your audio stuff, you might have to launch, you know, Logic to be able to make these changes. Anyway, I'm just imagining
something. I totally can see that way of working those issues, because it could be tricky to implement like a mixer or something like that inside of FCPX. I can see that.
I can just hear people at Apple right there go, damn you, Fenwick, that's hard. Now everybody's going to want that.
Yeah, I want it. Yeah. Basically, the main issue I have with FCPX is still not having the ability to make some nice audio mixing right inside the app and some other things. But yeah, for quick stuff, you know, I just have 10 Texas Masters, like you call them, and making a little best of to a music clip. You know, I do that in FCPX. That works quite nice. And edit, chop, chop, you know, it's done in no time. It's a little bit more difficult air quotes, in Premiere. But yeah, for the whole, the more complex edits, and if I know I have to do the sound and have lots of interviews and different music tracks, and you know, if the timeline gets cluttered up, I go for Premiere Pro because it works a little bit better for my taste, so to speak. But the quick stuff, FCPX right away.
Okay, well, this is just getting to be a bummer now. No, I'm totally kidding. So let's talk about cutting in Premiere versus cutting in... you know what? Let's not do that. I don't want to do a this and that thing. That's
it's
no fun.
All about audio.
So tell me what you like about cutting in Final Cut 10.
Yeah, like I said, it's quite... you know, if you have... just a few edits to do or chop down master or something. It's quick. That magnetic timeline is really nice for that. You know, you don't have to think about, oh, there's different tracks or different clips down the timeline or something like that. So for that kind of stuff, it works really nice. And even, you know, for tutorials or something, record dialogue right inside the app and stuff like that, that works quite nice. But yeah. That's basically it. Just a basic, small projects, quick turnaround, nothing fancy in terms of audio or interviews or different cameras. Just, you know, quick edits. That's basically it. And on the road, you know, on the notebook, just even showing clients. You know, I just bought I used a Windows notebook on the road, but I just bought a small 13-inch MacBook Pro. Just because, you know, sometimes it even is good just to put in the Texas master inside an FCPX timeline or project or whatever it's called. And, you know, show the client, and you can even chop out parts or have markers. And if you beam it on a screen, so to speak, with an HDMI output, it's quite a nice tool to just for client review, so to speak.
Okay, so this is interesting because this is a conversation that came up a couple episodes, two episodes ago with Wes Plate. And, you know, Wes had been on his big road trip across the States. Well, not all the way across, but a lot of it. And his conclusion, and again, this is he's self-teaching himself over the course of 6 weeks. And he was sort of alluding to the fact that on his quote-unquote real jobs, he's still going to use Premiere, but he was very pleased with cutting in Final Cut 10. And I want to say I had a chat with Scott Simmons over the sometime this last week, and I think we were going back and forth on Twitter, and he said, like the DM on Twitter, and he's like, yeah, Fenwick, everybody thinks you've lost your edge. Like you're sounding like such a fanboy, Kool-Aid drinking, you know, Final Cut apologist. I'm like, whoa. I don't think that's...
Wait a minute.
I don't think that's entirely true. I think I have my criticisms. But so my question to you, much like I asked Wes, what are the things... Okay, so it sounds like you're saying, oh, Final Cut 10's great if it's not a serious edit.
Yeah, well...
So I'm curious because I cut everything in Final Cut 10, and maybe I'm not doing anything that you would call serious. But I'm curious. What are the stumbling blocks? What are the roadblocks from making you go, oh yeah, I don't really want to trust this edit to Final Cut?
Well, essentially, it's if it gets too complex, I just don't like FCPX, and it's the interface as well. I have a nice big screen, in fact, more than one, and I have like the pancake edit, you know, a timeline screen setup. You know, I have my
Explain a pancake edit to people.
Yeah. Basically, that happens, I'm not quite sure. David Fincher's editor had that phenomenon. You know, you have your select reel a timeline on top, and then you have a second timeline beneath, and that's your main edit, so to speak. And you go between those or different timelines, so to speak, and drag and drop clips and, you know, just to manage all your stuff.
Right. So that, in Final Cut 10, you would use the little forward and back arrow. Yeah, like, oh, is this the one I want? Oh, no, wait, read the name. Okay, yeah, that's the one.
Yeah,
but you can't see them simultaneously. Yeah, you can't see them simultaneously. So I think the term pancake edit came because you have a very slim representation of your timeline, but at least you can see them both.
Yeah.
Okay, so
on a big screen, you know, I have really on one screen just maybe three or two timelines stuck, so to speak. And then I have the preview window and stuff like that on other and the media browser. You know, I have different screen setups, so to speak, for each and every task. Just for making select trios is one setup. For the pancake edit, so to speak, to make my master edit, so to speak, out of this. And then if I finish this, I have like a different setup where I have the effect window for color creating, so to speak, with Colorista 2 or Film Convert and stuff like that. And, you know, so I manage all my different tasks. It's quite better to do that way, and to have tracks or whatever you call it for a complex edit sometimes is quite essential, especially if you have a long format like a 30 minutes, 70 minutes documentary or something like that with lots of interviews and B-roll. And yeah, I'm not so keen to work that in FCPX, but maybe it's just, you know, the way I like to work, and you can make it work in FCPX. It's not the case that it's not possible.
I understand that. Like, for example, I'll give you a for instance that I kind of miss, and then I'm sorry, Scott, I'm going to sound like the Kool-Aid drinking apologist, but then I'm going to explain how I get around it. Yeah. So one of the things that I used to do is I would do a lot of our edits are you know, they're medium length, like customer stories with like chapter headers, you know? So like, you know, we do a couple of minutes and then it's like, so what did they do next? And there's a chapter header. And then it's like we tell them what they do next and what would, you know, next chapter header, what was the solution or whatever. So what I would do quite often is I would take those chapter headers so that when I hit Shift Z and could zoom out and see my whole piece, I would put the chapter headers up on track 3 or 4, because maybe it would be like dissolved to a background on track 3 and then the title would be on track 4. And I would purposely put them higher than they actually needed to be.
Just to have a visual reference, yeah.
Just to have a visual reference, yeah. And frankly, I will say, I totally miss that. My workaround, and yes, Scott, it is a workaround. He's given me a hard time about that. Well, it's just workaround, Fenwick. I have grown to absolutely love the timeline index, and what I would do is, like, you know, I might name those clips in a certain way so that if I search for, you know, bumper hyphen, okay, then I would see, oh, here's my four bumpers, and I can click on one and my cursor jumps to there. I click on number two, it jumps to there. So yes, it is a workaround. I think it would be nice if there was a way that you could force a piece of media above the primary or secondary timeline, even if it was like up in space, like it's not literally laying on top of something. Because I think that visually, we editors, you know, a lot of us do that. I know I did it all the time when I could. I will say that my timelines now look neater because they're more collapsed, but you know, to be fair, it's not as transparent for me to see how that timeline is going to transpire over time.
Yeah, that's right. The timeline index is quite powerful, actually. It's nice. But yeah, that's the same for me. If I have a complex edit, the magnetic timeline sometimes even gets in a way, so to speak. And sometimes some clips are connected to each other and you change something, cut something out, and all the connected clips are gone as well, and you didn't even notice or something like that.
Yeah, you got to understand how it works for you before you let it kill you, definitely.
Yeah, so, but then again, if you have a complex edit in Premiere, that can be tricky as well. But yeah, the old Final Cut 7 root, so to speak, you know how to deal with that.
So
the TTT back in the days.
Yes. I remember TTT. So, you know, I was thinking, Misha, I know that some of our listeners, like the way I just included you in that, our listeners, some of the listeners of the show are very new to video editing. And I know for a fact, like, for example, Dean Sherwood, I don't think he's cut on anything but Final Cut 10. I would be very interested, if you wouldn't mind doing it, could you take a couple of screenshots of some of your various Premiere layouts? Like, and you could, you know, and if you send them to me, I would love to post those on the website to kind of give, sort of inspire people like, oh yeah, I get that. That makes sense. And frankly, you know, it might, you know, I know that the people at Apple are totally aware that people would like to do that, but you are not the first person to say, gee, I wish I could customize the user interface a little more.
Yeah, I like to have like a big timeline and stuff like that. But even that, if I have a big timeline or whatever it's called in FCPX, the whole thing is just not the same. The track size or the clip size or whatever, it's just not that easy to manage. And
I have a tip I'd like to give people, and this is something that we got really excited in the office about just this last week, I think it was. I will be the first to admit that I do not always use the roles functionality, primarily because I don't really need it most of the time. However, I now have a new reason for wanting to select things and apply them to a role, and that's this. I do, and I think I've talked about this a lot, I do a lot of graphic, like animation elements in After Effects and bring them in as ProRes 4x4 files.
Yeah.
And if you drop those in over your timeline, they look like a video clip, okay? Yep. And that means that a video clip is going to be the same vertical height as your primary storyline, which is controlled by the little slider down in the lower right-hand corner of the timeline window. There's a little pop-up thing there, whatever. Yep. However, if you select those graphics, you can just swipe across all of them sitting up there on, you know, chat, quote unquote, you know, layer two, although it's not a layer, and you go up into your modify role assign, I think it's modify assign roles, and you select graphics for that, the vertical height of all of those what were once video clips collapses to approximately a quarter of the height of the normal video clip.
Oh, I see. Nice.
And it very much tidies up your timeline, because I will be the first to admit I miss the ability to say, you know, like in 7, you could say, oh, I want track 1 to be really tall so I can see the icons. But tracks 2 through 7, I want those to be really small. And you could individually select the height per track. So the ability to select a bunch of stuff and then just say, yeah, assign that to the graphics role, it really tidies up the timeline quickly.
Yeah, I didn't even know the modify assign role command, so that's nice. That kind of helps with the whole selecting
and
a bunch
again,
of clips
Simmons,
for the audio walk around, you know?
I'm not trying to do a bunch of workarounds. I just want people to know what I, you know, I figured that out, and I was like, oh, score. And I was working in the third story sliced editorial tower, whatever I always call it. I was up on the third floor, and I immediately ran all the way down to the first floor, no elevator, all stairs, to talk to Steve Navrat. And I'm like, Steve, check this out. And he's like, oh, that's awesome. So
it's quite, yeah, that's pretty good.
Isn't that, that's pretty kind of cool, huh?
Because, you know, you select all those tiny, you know, sound effects, they're all over the place, and then you hit the wrong key and all the selects are gone and stuff like that. So
I think it would also be nice if you could lock a roll.
Yeah.
You know, like,
but anyway,
just put a little lock next to it. Yeah, and how would that work if you were to magnetic timeline select stuff? Anyway, okay, so what are some of the other things that make you kind of shy away from using Final Cut 10 on the quote-unquote bigger jobs?
Yeah, well, like I said before, it's basically to do all the audio right inside of the editing application, especially if you know there will be a lot of changes or you just have to have a quick turnaround or send even a quick first edit out. You can make that happen quite away, right away in Premiere Pro. You have the mixer, you can load plugins, you can make submix, stuff like that. Even though there as well, you don't have a nice plugin management, you can just drag and drop those around or something like that. Even presets are not possible. That's for the tracks or something like that. But still, it works quite nice. And that's really what keeps me from using FCPX more often for the bigger stuff. Because sometimes I don't have the, maybe I had the time, but just, you know, it's something to send, like I said before, to send something to another application and get it back into the video application. It's sometimes just not the best thing to do.
Okay.
So, if you know what I mean.
No, I got it. So really, you're saying that in your estimation, stronger audio support would greatly benefit Final Cut 10.
It does. It should be a little bit better there. Like I said, the plugins are there. They are quite powerful. They sound good. They work good. They are efficient in terms of CPU, even though nowadays audio stuff is nothing really.
as opposed to doing 4K video.
Anyway, it doesn't really matter anymore. You can load quite a few plugins in your machine, and it doesn't really hurt. What's going on? And doesn't really notice that, so that's no problem at all. And the Logic plugins are quite powerful, so you should use them. You can, and like it is right now, but it's not perfect, so to speak.
Right. Now, I think I very much appreciate hearing the, because again, this gets back to, you know, my conversation that I had with Austin Flack back on episode 74. I call it, it's sort of the TiVo syndrome. You know, I don't have the audio background that you have, Misha. So I look at the audio editing in Final Cut 10 and I'm like, score. I'm subframe audio and I get to use all my bits.
Yeah, that's good, actually. That's really the audio editing in Final Cut 7 was, meh.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I had to crossfade everything, it seemed. But, you know, I get to use my good plugins, at least the ones I want, and I have subframe editing. So to me, that's like really, really great. You have a different experience because you have dealt with, you know, the Logic and the Pro Tools, and you're obviously using Audition much deeper than I am. I actually do record the show here in Audition, and I do all my audio editing and whatnot there. But I don't see the limitations that are actually really big limitations for you. And I think that when you experience, if I were to experience what it would be like to actually have, you know, track-based plugins and a mastering channel and subgroups or whatever, I might have to go, oh yeah, now I totally get it. I didn't get it before, now I totally get it, you know? And I think that it's really easy, and this is kind of what, you know, Scott was teasing me about. It's like, you know, he was saying to me, he goes, dude, you really got to learn Avid and Premiere. I go, well, I can cut in Premiere. I don't like it. And I don't really feel like, I don't have the bandwidth to learn Avid. And he goes, yeah, you do. I go, no, I don't, because I don't want to kind of learn it. I want to really learn it. And I think I really know Final Cut, but that's just because I choose to specialize. That's the way my little brain works. I really like to specialize. But I do realize that it gives me a limited perspective, and that's why it's good to talk to people like Austin, or I had Steve Miller on. And by the way, I would love to talk to another Premiere editor who doesn't like Final Cut Pro. I think it's time to do another one of those episodes. You know,
just to see what's out there. Yeah.
Well, you know, a lot has happened since I did the episode that I did with Steve Miller, and I know that we're now like on the second update of 2014. Yeah. So it would be good to talk to somebody. And I think Scott even said you might be able to get Al Mooney on the show. I go, I don't know. That might be pushing it.
Well. Maybe he's up for it, actually. So, the last two updates did quite a few good things for FCPX, and I see the potential. I saw it right away, even though it was like the first day, you know, bought it, saw it,
Yeah, we all did that.
Opened the window and, you know, burned it in an open celebration, my machine, so to speak. But yeah, I kind of got back to it in a way for the easy stuff. But yeah, it's like just the audio. It kind of frustrates me a bit if I have to do a lot of audio and I can't really do it. It seems so simple, you know, have tracks and submix and stuff like that and copy and paste, so to speak, plugins from one to another track or have presets for them and change those up. And, you know, if you have no time or tight schedule or just, you know, it's easier that way.
Right.
Even though you might have the time, just send it back to another application. And you can make presets in FCPX as well for the plugins and open them up and load them. And, you know, can be easier.
No, I totally get it. And I think, you know, I think it's really important to know that in any software development, any company, whether it's, you know, a behemoth like Adobe or Apple or, you know, a small company that's writing, you know, a plugin or something like that, I think it's really important to know as end users that these people, I think by and large, they tend to be very passionate about what they're doing. And they are constantly managing resources. You know, I know for a fact that Apple takes all of the suggestions that they get, in the door, and they log those things and they prioritize them and they, you know, they vet them, whatever they, and there is a list. I happen to know there is a list. These are the things that we want to do. And for every iteration, you prioritize the ones that are getting the most noise, if you will. Yep. And then you weigh those against, you know, what keeps the application on track. You know, many years ago, I'll tell a little side story. Many years ago, I used in the late 90s, I used to travel around with a company called Play. And Play made a thing called the Trinity. And the people who started Play split from NewTek in the mid-90s. NewTek had made the original Amiga-based video toaster, totally different than what they did much later. But the Play people, there was a fundamental shift in that company where half of the company wanted to do everything in hardware and half of the company wanted to do everything in software. And the computers were not quite to the point where software would do it. So a handful of people left the company and they went to make Play, which was a very much a hardware-based device. But I got to meet a lot of people that were very much involved in the software development at NewTek. Now, most people know that NewTek is known for Lightwave 3D, the 3D software. And I will say that I know like almost nothing about 3D. I run away from it, you know, like crazy every time somebody says, we should do this in 3D.
Next.
It's a completely different world. But one of the things that he said to me, he said, in software development, you have to be really careful because if you just listen to every request and throw it into the app, what happens is the and I know that there's a software term for this and somebody will tweet this or whatever, but it's called, I think they call it application creep or function creep or something like that. It's something creep. And basically what they mean is you lose your focus on what you want to or need to be, because the outside influence doesn't know where you're going, okay? So, like, it's very important in software development is I have a goal. This is where I want to go, and we need to move toward that end as we add features. Now, if you add everything, you might make people happy, but you'll never – but what will happen is your software will – it will lose robustness. It may not work as well because you don't have a path that you're going on. And what ended up happening with New Tech back in the 90s was that there was a TV show on American television called I think it was called Sequest, I think it was, and it was set in the future, and it was set in a submarine, and there was a talking dolphin. Remember that?
Okay. Oh God, yeah.
So all of the underwater shots of the submarine were done in Lightwave.
I see.
And one of the things that the guy said to me, he goes, if you just listen to every customer and give them all the features they want, you're going to end up with an application that's really good for rendering submarines.
I see.
Because they were so excited to have... And you know what? I'm sure I'm probably telling stuff that those guys would rather not have me tell publicly. Sorry. But you know, they were so excited that NBC in the United States was using Lightwave to do the special effects shots on this television show. They were like, whatever they want. Give them what they want. And they were doing refractions and blah, 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 blah. You know, I don't even know the words. I can't even fake like I know what I'm talking about. But... And that's what he said. He goes, if you give the public or if you give the customers everything they want, you'll end up with a really great application for rendering submarines. And so it's very important, and we know that. But I agree. I would love to see some of these audio things. So, Misha, as you know, quite often at the end of the show, I say, you know, what would be the one feature that you asked for if you could sneak in the back door and talk to the programmers? Is there one? I know we've talked for like the last half hour about a bunch of things you'd like to see. Is there one we haven't mentioned, or do you want to promote one to say this is Misha's number one choice?
Yeah, it's audio. Still will be. Is the most important things for me or thing is to have a little bit better audio implementation right inside the app. That's, yeah, I think will be really important for that application. Would be, should be, could be, whatever.
Very good.
So that's it. The answer was the whole show, so to speak.
Great. Well, Misha Schmidt, thank you so much for doing this. If people want to follow you online, what's the best place to find you?
Probably Twitter is still the best thing to connect. It's Misha Schmidt. That's the best way, I guess. And there's a link to my website or whatever. I have every now and then I do a little bit of a tutorial. I have actually one that explains the whole trip from FCPX to Logic Pro X and back.
Oh, very good.
A little bit. I made that because, you know, the post with the from Michael Keone came up with how you could do it in Logic in FCPX. But then again, I thought, well, no, maybe there's a different way. And yeah, you can find those as well there.
Okay, very cool. I'm going to have to find that because I will put that I'll put that in the show notes. And I'll also put a link to Michael Cioni's thing that he did about.
Yeah, it's quite nice what he did actually and right inside the application. Yep. But yeah.
Very cool. Well, hey, man, thanks for taking the hour. Really appreciate it. And this has been a lot of fun. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right. So thanks, Misha. Thanks for doing that. Really appreciate it. You know, you can find him. I know he mentioned his name at the end there, but and it was funny, too, because I've been spelling his name wrong all day on all of my notes that I've been taking. So anyway, it's M-I-C-H-A-S-C-H-M-I-D-T. And that's where you can find him on Twitter. And then his company site is referenced on the Twitter thing. It's like, I think I lost it here. No, it is, yeah, I lost it. Anyway, it's like, I'm going to say it wrong. It's like color film sound or film sound color.de, something like that. So go check it out on Twitter, or I'll put a link to it in the show notes. Oh, show notes. You know, I'm going to have to get some help doing this because that's a lot of work. Anyway, thanks a lot for listening. I want to thank you for all the kind words that and the comments that people are leaving on iTunes. I do go check those. I read them all. And also, thank you for leaving the little star comments, you know, 5 stars. It's totally cool. And I also want to remind people that you can indeed go to digitalcinemacafe.com. And over on the right-hand side, there's a little green tab. And if you click on that guy, you can leave an audio message or question for the show. So if you want to leave a comment about our upcoming 100th show, and believe me, doing two of these a week, it's going to happen any day now. If you want to leave a comment about the 100th show, by all means, do that. And if I get them in enough time, and I actually have enough time, I'll you know, bang those together, and we'll do a little playback. So that would kind of be fun. So yeah, it's been a great year, and we're not done. And believe me, there's more stuff. There's more stuff in the works. More stuff coming from. You know, there's more stuff. That's all I'm going to say. Anyway, I'm done. I'm out of here. Thanks for listening. We will be back Friday with another episode of The Grill. Later, later. One of these buttons to stop that one.